There's one. Set for stun.
Three guys sitting in a dark room that smells like bad cucumbers.
Don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Inconceivable!
Now featuring 11. 11 listeners.
This is me.
Hey gang, John here. We're still putting things together over here, back together rather, over here at the 50 Days HQ. We got a couple of things lined up coming up here. Of course, very exciting things are happening at Dragon Con as you stretch into the last 25 days before the con. You get to start dealing with like things like hotels being canceled on you or not being able to modify reservations, things like that, you know, fun things. Like I said, you know, we still had some things that had gone on. Lee is back from her vacation, so we're lining up some more stuff. But in the meantime, the folks over at Southern Fried Gaming Expo, Game Room Expo, I got that wrong even when we were doing the podcast, have been nice enough to share with us a podcast, or yes, well, this is a podcast, a recording from one of their panels over there with John Kowalik, who you might know from Dork Tower or Munchkin or a gazillion other artist typey things and funny stuff. He did a panel that Lee moderated and along with John's daughter, and it's very entertaining, and we thought that would be a nice little filler while we get something out to you hopefully tomorrow and the next 20 some odd days and try to get some stuff crammed down your throat real quick. Any of the directors or anybody that are happen to be listening, go ahead and reach out to us at 50days@theuniquegeek.com. That's 50days@theuniquegeek.com. And if you haven't heard back from us, or you know, things are getting lost left and right over here. And quick update on my nephew. He is back home. He's running around, doesn't understand that, you know, when you have brain surgery that you just can't all of a sudden continue with your life that you had before, at least not right away. But fortunately, he is home. It seems like everything is going to be okay. Of course, there, you know, the regular complications that are associated with just surgery in general are going on. So again, thank you to all of you who gave me well wishes to myself and my family, mostly my family. Whatever your belief system happens to be, just positive thinking is always a groovy thing. So that's cool. Appreciate that. All right. So without further ado, here is Lee and John Kowalik and his daughter, Louisa, I believe is her name, without a panel from the 2016 Southern Fried Gaming Game Room Expo, did it again, called Out of the Box. Enjoy.
So you ready?
Sure.
Okay. I think it's 1 o'clock. Am I correct? Or close? There we go. So hi, I'm Lee Bennett Connor. I want to introduce John Kowalik. I hope I am pronouncing that correctly.
That's fine. Yes.
How's the real pronunciation?
Welcome to the darkest room in the convention.
Yes. This one is kind of dark. So we're just kind of doing a fireside chat. I've got some questions for John. We're going to talk about that. And we also have a special guest, Louisa. So we are going to talk about some also things to start with is being a geek parent. Are people in here geek parents? Any geek parents? Geek parents that want to be? All right, well, we're going to talk about this. Share it with your friends who are geek parents. What have you found to be the best thing about being a geek parent?
Well, especially now that Louisa is 7 and I've got my, you know, she will come up on stage with me.
Yes.
Yes, she is.
This is awesome.
The absolute best thing was with Star Wars Episode 7 coming out. Louisa's become a really big Star Wars fan.
Yay!
And when the trailers were being released for Episode 7, I would wait until she got home so we could watch them together. And that is absolutely, by far and away, the best Star Wars experience I've ever had.
Really?
It was wonderful.
I remember when the number 3 came out, my son was probably right at her age, maybe a year or so younger, and I was trying to kind of soften the blow of it during that scene. And I said, I think everybody's just sleeping after Anakin walks through the temple. I think everybody's just sleeping. And he turned and looked at me and went, Mom, I know what happened. And I was like, okay. So yeah, Star Wars has been awesome as a parent. And I think the other thing, I saw you guys playing games, which I think there's a great thing in the here with Geek Dad about, you know, why being a geek parent's great and why to play games with kids. So what games do you guys play at your house? Or I bet Apples to Apples shows up a couple of times.
Louisa does love playing Apples to Apples. That's probably one of your favorites.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites, but there's one that tops that one off.
Which one?
Yo-Kai Watch Life.
Oh, yes. Luis is very big into Yo-Kai Watch at the moment.
Now, what is Yo-Kai Watch?
It's a TV show with someone who has a watch that can see spirits. They can inspire people or things that, like, if Blazion inspired someone, they would be energetic.
Okay, so it's a show. It's not a game, though.
They've got some games.
Oh, okay.
So this was the game of life with the Yo-Kai Watch characters.
Oh, okay.
So that's currently Louisa's favorite.
Mm. And so Apples to Apples, out of the box publishing.
Yes.
That is a lot of, you did a lot, you guys have done a lot of stuff with that. What, how, still going, still moving forward?
With Apples to Apples?
Well, Apples to Apples are all the other games that you have. I have a list.
Well, the main one right now is Munchkin.
Yeah.
So that is
Munchkin.
I've drawn 5,000 Munchkin cards. I'm on my way to 5,500.
Oh, okay. 5,500. Oh my goodness.
So that's whereas with Apples to Apples, I drew one apple.
That's all you had to.
That was pretty, well. I also did the logo for it. I wrote all the flavor text in the early Apples to Apples, because what happened was we got very lucky. Out of the Box Publishing is a game company I was a co-owner and co-founder of, and we formed the company to make a game called Bosworth, which the majority owner of the company had invented. And it's a very lovely chess variant game. If you get a chance, you can find it probably at some used store, St. Vinny's, something like that. Really nice little game, but it's a chess variant. So it's not going to sell a lot of copies, and we didn't sell a lot of copies. So we were very fortunate that the very first convention we went to with Bosworth as a company, a person who invented Apples to Apples came up to our booth and said, I've got a game I'd like to show you. it was literally the dumbest luck, because Mark and I, who were the two gamers in the company, didn't want to have anything to do with this guy. We weren't looking to buy games.
Right.
Al, who is the marketing manager of the company, set up a meeting. This guy's name is Matt Kirby. Set up a meeting with this guy after the floor closed, and so we were committed. Matt Kirby pulls out this huge game. The original version of Apples to Apples was a very large, very complex game called, I think it might have been called Apples and Oranges, and it had many different aspects of the game. It was like a really big board with lots of bells and whistles, and one small part of the game was taking out these cards, and somebody was a judge, and other people would play their card, pretty much exactly as Apples to Apples plays now. Mm-hmm. At that point, Mark, who was the majority owner of the company, said, wait a second, this is the game. And we literally picked up all the rest of the game, put it on another table, and just spent an hour or 2 hours playing with these cards.
Just with that part.
It was just fantastic. It was something we'd never seen anything like it before. This was 16, 17 years ago. So at that point in time, all of the games that were – all the party games on the market were essentially trivia games. You'd go through
– Trivial Pursuit was so big right then,
right? Yeah, Trivial Pursuit was the last big mass market game before Apples to Apples, I would venture to say. Mm-hmm. And pretty much all the games you would find at places like Target, or Kmart were either these, quick and easy, simple games you get around Christmas, Happy Days, the Happy Days game, the, those sorts of things, or some form of trivia game. Mm-hmm. So it was really amazing having a game that changed gaming essentially fall right in our laps. And the real luck was that somebody in the company was able to recognize this was something very special. Oh, and this one component of this game was just something amazing.
Well, I love apples to apples. And one of the things I always just remember, a friend of mine, I had the card Monkey. Animalistic or something like that. And she put down Monkey and she goes, a couple of words, they throw poop. And I was like, you win. There you go. We're all good. So it was a fun game. And it was also, you guys put out a children's edition because I'm so glad you did, because we were already going through decks and like, okay, he would know this one. He would know this one, you know, and a lot of fun with that too. So the children's edition came about just people asking or?
Essentially. Early sales were strong with Apples to Apples, but they weren't anything spectacular. We'd like be selling maybe 5,000 copies one year, but then the next year we'd sell 10,000 copies, and the year after that we'd sell 20,000 copies. And it just seemed like a very natural thing to put out. And in fact, actually, we didn't put it out, but there's a Disney version out now, which has got pictures on it. And actually, this was after we sold Apples to Apples to Mattel. And for me, part of the magic of how Apples to Apples works as a game engine was the fact that we were at my brother's house with his family a few Thanksgivings ago. Louisa would have been 4. Her cousin Danielle would have been 5. And because the Disney version has got pictures on the green cards, they could play along just, you know, without any rules changes.
All right.
You'd have to read out, you know, okay, so what's the most silly? And they would, Luis and her cousin would get the cards. And
there we go.
Did you?
And like, whoever gets the silliest, the judge gets to decide. Like, if you got Goofy or Donald, the judge would have to choose between them.
Mm-hmm. But who do you choose?
If I was it, I would probably think Donald is very funny sometimes.
Donald? That's pretty good. I like that. I like that answer. And I like your reason behind it. I always think that's the thing, too, that we like in these games is you put them down, but you also have a reason. You know, you're able to talk about it and articulate. And I always think that's fun with kids, too.
But yeah, when, I mean, early
and
on.
And adults.
Early on, Apples to Apples won, it won the Mensa award, but it also won the Parenting Award. So I mean, it's just, the thing is really fantastic and it just appeals up and down across the board. So yeah, we really just stumbled into that, so that was hugely fortunate.
Well, something else I think you stumble into, and I read a lot of your FAQs on your site, which were, thank you. Those were actually very interesting.
Somebody reads the FAQs.
I did. I read the FAQs. Well, I have to come up with questions. But how did you get your style of your art? Not just for Munchkin, but for other things as well. I mean, you have a very set style, the dark side Munchkin, and I love it because I can look at someone and go, I know who that is.
Essentially, it's not being good enough to copy anybody else. I'm actually serious about that. It's a lot of the people, and also, well, I loved Peanuts as a kid, and Peanuts has got a very straightforward, obviously, style, an almost perfect style to me. But yeah, a lot of it was early on when I was in high school, just trying to draw in a general kind of Peanuts/BC. Style and not being able to, and eventually your style evolves. So Munchkin's been out 15 years now, and if you go back and look at the very first edition of Munchkin, some of those cards you can kind of tell, or you know, you can sort of see the style beginning. A lot of those cards I really don't like at all. I just it was a very the original Munchkin was a very rushed project. It was 156 cards, something like that, 162 cards, and I was drawing with a very bad pen, a Sharpie actually, with very poor quality paper. So if you look closely, you can see a lot of bleeding going on in those lines. But there are a few cards like Duck of Doom. You can sort of see, you know, what would eventually become my style beginning to evolve. I've actually asked Steve many times if I can just go back and redraw it, and he doesn't want me to do that. He thinks some of those cards have become iconic, and to me, some of them are just painful.
Oh, no. Which ones are painful?
Oh, I'd have to.
We'd have to go through the whole box.
One of them actually gazebos. I still don't like drawing the gazebo.
You don't like drawing the gazebo?
I don't like drawing the gazebo at all. I just had to sign
Sorry.
One.
He just had to sign one because my husband loves that one. The gazebo's tough.
I don't like moon maidens. I remember that one as being. Here, let me see some of the
cards. Okay, sure. Okay. Here's a big old stack.
You talk, okay.
Well, and I actually wanted to ask you a little bit about the process.
Oh, the dwarves. I didn't like how the dwarves looked early on.
You didn't like the dwarves early?
No, I've started drawing.
And the orcs. I love your orcs. I don't know why. They look menacing and yet nice. I don't know.
I make evil cute is basically my business card.
I'm writing that down.
I love the moon maidens.
You like the moon maidens?
Yeah, I like that code.
Okay.
Okay, so why do you like the moon maidens?
I like their outfits, and I like that they're on the moon.
You like that they're on the moon? So I'm curious about the process. So one of the things you said is that the process is basically you guys will be around a table and somebody will throw something out and you ink it right then. How do you get to things, though, level 13, thing with a name so long there's no room for a picture on the card? Which is, I know you can't see it, but it's just kind of an eye and some tentacles.
Well, most of the time, I just get the art specs. Some of the, like Munchkin Apocalypse was one of those sets where Steve and Phil and Andrew all came up to Madison for a distributor convention, a distributor open house. So we're able to just go out to a coffee shop and spend a few hours there. And Steve had most of the ideas down, so he would just throw out some of the card names to me, and I would start sketching in my sketchbook. Mm-hmm. Munchkin Zombies was another one. I think Zombies, I was down in Austin visiting Steve Jackson Games, and we went to an ice cream, Amy's Ice Cream in Austin. And we just sat around throwing ideas back and forth. Mm-hmm. Most of the cards, I will just get the art specs. And at this point in time, I've been working with them for 15 years, so it's kind of like a little bit of a marriage when you finish other people's sentences. I will know pretty much what they're looking for, and they will know pretty much what to expect with a card from me. Mm-hmm. So an art spec will only be maybe a line, maybe two lines long.
Oh, really? Okay.
At this point in time. But sometimes there will be an art spec that says, in its entirety, you know what to do, John. And the sad thing is, sometimes I will.
What's a card?
I
love your Jabberwocky. If you ever get this one, I just.
Oh, yes. I actually did like the Jabberwocky. I think that was an early card.
Yeah,
and in fact, I've drawn twice now because. Oh, actually, I can't talk about that. Sorry.
Oops.
One of the problems with Munchkin is, at this point in time, Munchkin is such a well-oiled machine that there will be releases coming out that have not been announced yet that I will have finished months ago, and it will sort of sneak up on me and surprise me when I see them on a store shelf.
So there are some surprises that I can look for to buy for my husband and son come Christmas?
Awesome. Yeah, there are some big Munchkin surprises coming up, and they're a lot of fun, and I just can't talk to them until they become announced by Steve Jackson Games.
Has it been tough for you? I mean, this is the brown and cream, as I call it, of the cards. Because somebody's like white and black, and I was like, it's not black and white. But has that been a difficulty, or do you draw them in color and then they just do
no?
Whatever?
Actually, I only give them the black and white line work. They've got fantastic colorists, and they will do a much better job with the color than I would have. Color and color theory are not my strong points as a cartoonist. So I'm working. I mean, sometimes I will color cards for other companies, and I always kind of want to say, "Are you sure you want me to do this?" I'm coloring. I'm working on a game called Sausage Party right now.
Lone Shark Games,
and I'm doing the coloring, and I'm trying to figure out like the best way to get different colored sausages. This is the glamorous life of a graphic artist, folks.
There you go. That is good. Curious, you drawing?
She is.
Awesome. Curious, do you – one of the cards, I just really went through the deck and pulled some cards that I love. The Ghoul Friends, i.e. girlfriends, set on old girlfriends?
No. But it's just one of those cards which I don't particularly like.
It is an interesting card. I was curious. Like, do you sometimes have people in mind when you're doing this? Like, I look at this halfling and I can see some resemblance across the table over there, and so I just didn't. I wonder,
no, there are a few cards. I will throw some friends in from time to time. There's a card in Munchkin Zombies based on my friend Ken Height, who I thought needed to be the zombie expert.
Okay.
But for the most part, no.
I
will occasionally, we will do something where, for charity purposes, we will auction off an appearance in Munchkin.
Oh, okay.
And especially over in Ireland, where the gamers are fantastic and wonderful and generous and crazy, this will go for 1,000 or 2,000 euros. Because they hold their auctions in a bar, which, you know, just
best way ever to auction. Yes.
See, so the highest a Munchkin appearance has ever gone for, though, was in Seattle for the Child's Play event, and a Munchkin appearance went for $4,000.
Oh, there. Wow, that's great!
So,
yay,
at those times, I've got to try and, you know, use my style, kind of like how the Simpsons will, you know, do their caricatures still in a Simpsons style. Mm-hmm. I'll try really hard to make it still look like Munchkin, so it doesn't look obviously like it's a caricature of somebody.
Okay, I'm curious about with some of the characters. Because I just saw the Munchkin Marvel, and I have not opened
Luis
it or
looked
at it.
Luis has just drawn the apple from Apples to Apples.
The apple from Apples to Apples.
Excellent.
So you can see it runs in the family.
I also
a budding artist right here. And you did on what on the other side?
Oh.
I like drawing crystal gems sometimes.
Okay.
It's just show where, like, two gems, they're like gems.
Oh, Steven Universe.
And they can just, like, fuse together into one.
Two of the gems into one? Very cool.
And then they just turn into one.
One of the really great things about being a dad right now is that there are some really great kid shows out there, and Steven Universe is fantastic. Louisa introduced me to it, and I love it.
You also like Wee Bear Bears.
Yes, I also like Wee Bear Bears a lot.
Wee Bear Bears is hysterical. If you have not watched it, do. And has anybody here watched Gravity Falls? Gravity Falls, yay,
oh,
thank
Gravity
you.
Gravity Falls is wonderful. It's like the X-Files for kids.
It is. I love this show, and I'm a big X-Files fan. And I love that show. I think it's a lot of fun. We're in a time right now, I call it kind of a geek renaissance. I think there's a lot of great gaming, TV, movies, and animation going on that has just been amazing. And the gaming is a real part of that. I mean, we've kind of had a renaissance in people playing tabletop games. You see it out there in the demo room.
And I think part of this is you just have like the first generations who grew up on things like Dungeons and Dragons in the 70s or, you know, the stuff in the 80s have now started becoming parents. And these are the people in charge of a lot of, you know, the companies out there. But yeah, tabletop gaming is really going through a huge renaissance in the U.S. right now. It's always been big in countries like Germany. But now you're seeing a game like Pandemic at Target, or seeing King of Tokyo or Munchkin at Target is just really fantastic and kind of bizarre and wonderful. And yeah, the animation right now is really excellent. Like I grew up in the 70s, and I realized even then that the animation was pretty terrible for most kids' shows. I was in college in the 80s, so I wasn't really that in touch. But, you know, I just the few shows I did see in the 80s, the animation was awful. And it, as a cartoonist, it takes – I mean, I really have a hard time getting beyond bad animation. The Animaniacs took me so long to get into because it's a wonderful show. But I just thought that the animation looked really incredibly cheap, especially for, you know, Warner Brothers, who had done these brilliant Bugs Bunny, the Looney Tunes in the 50s, which were just the highest form of the art to me.
Well, I think it was interesting. I came in this room, actually, and this is where they had the cartoons running this morning. And I came in for at three different times, about 30, 45 minutes apart. So we knew it was different cartoons, and they all looked the same. I mean, so I couldn't tell what cartoon was what. And I think that's what I grew up on. I mean, I loved Scooby-Doo, but I even have to admit, the early Scooby-Doo is not the greatest animation.
No.
It's a little different when you watch a Bugs versus a Scooby. You know,
yeah, in the 70s, you had the Bugs Bunny Road Runner Hour, I think it was called, where they just, they re-showed like a lot of these great, 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 cartoons. And those were wonderful.
Awesome. They were awesome.
But yeah, right now there are so many, like, Steven Universe has got some terrific animation. Yeah. Wee Bear Bears has got his own style. Gravity Falls looks beautiful. Star Wars Rebels is fantastic.
My favorite character is Sabine on that. Because she's an artist, and I just like, because she's an artist.
Is that a friend of yours?
Sabine is from Star Wars Rebels.
Oh, Sabine from Star Wars Rebels, yes. Yeah. So one of the other things, so you kind of talked about the weirdest request of, you know what to do, John, but
yes.
What has been one that you've just been like, I have no idea what you want me to draw here? Above and beyond, just do what you want to do.
There have been several like that. I'm off the top of my head, I can't think of the specific examples.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one card which I just blogged about recently, which I just could not draw.
I was going to see if you wanted to talk about that. Yeah.
Yes. So this was a card after Louise was born, when she was a 1 year old, maybe, for Munchkin Zombies, and it was called Meals on Wheels. And it was the card specifications were a couple of zombies looking over a baby pram. And I got to tell you, having a 1 year old, or maybe she was even younger at that time, I just could not draw that for life me. There's like no way I could draw a baby being put in danger. So they actually had to get somebody else to draw it. They were very, nice about it. I mean, after you've drawn several thousand cards, I suppose you get some leeway. But yeah, I just absolutely had to turn that one down. It's like, I couldn't do it.
You can't do that one. Yeah. I think that's what I loved is interesting. So just kind of going through the cards and seeing them. I love your version of Krampus. I really wish we had something here, but if you do have it, the Christmas Krampus actually looks how I worry about Krampus. It's perfect.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, you can't hurt these cards. They've played them many a time. It's a person and yet looks like a wolf with the horn. I mean, it's a little scary, just like I would think Krampus is. And I love that. And then,
what I'll tend to do with a card like that, with a creature that's been around for a while, is I'll go online, I'll look at a few drawings, but then when I actually get to drawing it myself, I'll wait a day and just start drawing it with no reference so that I come up with something that's, as unique as I can get it and doesn't rely too heavily on other sources.
Well, I love the Bigfoot is just the Bigfoot. I didn't see Sasquatch. I just see a big foot with a really ugly leg. I kind of love that. I love how you just take those things. And then you kind of take the weird, like hydrant. So it's just a fire hydrant with snake heads. How do you get to that?
Again, I'll just get very, very simple requests from art specs from Steve Jackson Games. And they... essentially a multi-headed fire hydrant.
And that was what they said, multi-headed. Okay. And they said multi-headed.
Yes.
Okay.
Most of the time, Steve in particular has got very clear ideas of what some of these cards should look like.
Mm-hmm.
But once, apart from that very simple instruction, I can essentially do whatever I want. I get very few cards rejected at this point.
I would think. Snails on speed. So we don't see the snails. We just see the speed gone, that they've gone through. I love it because you can see the guys kind of shaking up like, oh my gosh, they're scary. I really wish we had something here, but that's great. And then your chickens and your ducks have become kind of iconic. Chickens and ducks.
Well, it's funny. The Duck of Doom, a lot of people now will look at the Duck of Doom and say, oh my gosh, that's a ripoff of Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus. The Duck of Doom actually came first by about a year and a half, something like 2 years. So, I mean, they are very different, but just the big eye and the small round head is similar between both the pigeon from Don't Let the Pigeon Drive the Bus and the Duck of Doom.
And also the chicken. I mean, chickens are just kind of, they're just humorous. I mean, as you said, you make evil cute, but you also make things that are rather just boring cute. I mean, you've made a very cute chicken and a very cute duck. Ducks are already cute. Well, ducklings. So.
When you've drawn 5,000 cards, you try and look to make things interesting.
So why is there on the floating nose, why are these things under it, tentacles under it?
I think basically the floating nose is a little bit of a play on the beholder. From Dungeons and Dragons. And the beholder's got some of the beholders have got some tentacles. And so and but also it just looks a little bit like snot. So
it does look a little like snot.
Munchkin operates on a very base humor level, and it's both Steve and I are probably 12-year-olds at heart.
Well, and I think with our son, we probably started this when he was 12 or 13. Because there aren't too many cards in here that are, you can pull out the ones that are like, yeah, no. But I think they did. And that was one of the things they would love. They would love to get, you know, I think you have one up here that, Snot Elemental. I mean, that's like, yes. You know, and you get to play that against people.
And by the way, if you think it's great in black and white, wait till you get to the color version.
Oh, is there a color version of one coming?
They've redone. Actually, all of my skin is now in color.
Oh, that's awesome. So that just means something else my husband will buy. Okay.
About five years ago, maybe a little bit longer.
So he's starting to, okay.
Yeah, all of the original Munchkin is now in color.
Well, and I knew a lot of the special ones were. I have the Christmas ones, Crass Kringle. Yes. Love that. Just showing how commercial Christmas is. You get to take some of those little kind of fun shots at things.
Yeah, a lot
like
of the
that.
Stuff, a lot of the stuff in the background of Munchkin cards, are things I'll just throw in for the fun of it. So they don't specify, you know, some of the signs of the background or things of that, some of the in-jokes that we'll try and throw in there.
Well, there's cursed B.O., as in body odor. And I was just like, somebody went to a con. Somebody went to a con that had a really not as open game room as we did. Yes. Had some fun here with this one.
One of the first conventions, I went to San Diego Comic-Con years and years and years ago. And this is when I was doing the Dork Tower comic book. Mm. And there was a guy who came up the first day in an elf outfit, kind of looked a little bit like Link. And then the second day he came up in the same elf outfit. And then the third day he came up in the same elf outfit. And by the third day, that outfit was, it was rich.
It was, yes. It was elemental in many ways. Yes.
Yes, it was.
I think, yeah, that's kind of the rule, dudes. Change the costume every day. That's one of the con rules, I think. One of the other things. So with Louisa, how much are you guys working together on stuff? Is it she just kind of took this on herself and you're like, yep, let's draw?
Well, it started actually when, Judith, the lovely and talented Judith, my wife, used to work for a public radio show called What Do You Know?
But she couldn't come with us on Saturdays.
Yes, it was a Saturday morning show. So every Saturday she would have to go to the show and help out at the live show. So Louisa and I started having daddy-daughter days, and we would go to my studio.
I packed lunches.
Yes. And awesome. So Louisa has her own drawing table at the studio, so I will go there.
I've been drawing lots of things with my markers that my dad gave me, and I've been drawing with them every time, but we're not alone because we have a cat, but sometimes when she gets outside, I worry.
Yes, Studio Cat, if you follow me on
Studio
Twitter.
Studio Cat? Is that Studio Cat? Okay.
On Twitter, she's called Studio Cat, but what's she called?
Her real name is Kitty Matey.
Yes, Kitty Matey.
Kitty Matey. Ah, okay. Yes. Yeah. All cats knock things down too.
She's Doozy's mom. She's
our other cat, our home cat, his name is Doozer.
And the other one is Ginger, but that's not really
Ginger.
Ginger.
Oh,
Ginger.
One of his names is Button.
Ginger Button.
Which is short for Button Your Face. Which he will sit on your shoulder with his butt on your face. But Button is a much nicer way.
His
name is really, really long. It's Ginger Cupcake Ginger Cupcake Rabbit Ellipsis Judith Lightning Button the Face Robert Kabalik.
Yes.
Okay. Very long names. I like that. You also did, and I don't know if you still do, you do editorial cartoons too.
I don't do those anymore.
You did them.
I'm a much happier person.
You are a much happier person not doing it?
I am the sort of person who gets really upset by politics. A lot of my friends who are become great editorial cartoonists love the political system. They love being part of the political system. I would do editorial cartoons and I would just get mad at things. And that's actually kind of a healthy attitude for an editorial cartoonist to have, but it doesn't make your work day very pleasant.
It's not a fun day.
No. So I quit editorial cartooning in 2000.
Okay.
And actually, I quit the I used to write feature articles for the newspaper and also do editorial cartoons for the morning daily paper in Madison. And five weeks before our wedding,
I was wondering if you were going to tell
my fiance said, "Honey, you're miserable at the paper. Quit, and I'll support you." So
what a wonderful person.
She is fantastic.
Big gold star there.
Yes. And actually, if you go into any kind of creative field, having somebody with insurance benefits is even better than finding good pens. That's really, really important.
Yes.
So
yes.
I had the first year afterwards, actually quitting is great. If you're ever in a job you really don't like, quitting just feels so good, especially if you got something lined up afterwards.
Why did you quit in 2000 and not any other date?
Good question.
Well, I kept doing some editorial cartoons for the newspaper after I quit doing the writing.
Right.
And at that point, the gaming illustration work was coming along strongly enough. Munchkin had been going for 2 or 3 years at that point. Dork Tower had been going for about 5 years.
Right.
About 4 years at that point. And it just felt like the right thing to do.
Well, and you still get to say some things with Dork Tower, too.
On occasion.
You have occasionally,
I do. Yeah, it's more of a social thing than a political, strictly political thing.
Yeah.
But yes, I will, I tend to think that gaming should be inclusive and that fandom should be inclusive.
Thank you.
And so, with things like the whole Gamergate, stuff going on, I will occasionally touch on, topics like that, but that's more of a knee jerk reaction. If somebody punches my friends, I'm going to punch back in my own way.
Well, there you go. I like that. I mean, and you're punching with a pen. And paper,
and also,
which is
if
nice.
If you try and do it humorously and be somewhat clever about it, I think it works better than just
clever does work. Yes.
Yeah. The people who are baboons just can't get it. Then
they don't, but other people do. And I did. I found the curse of the tiny hands, and I think I'm going to hold this one out. There is a curse card that says tiny hands.
That was
and
not
I know
a current card.
It was not a current card. This is actually looks like one of the very early ones you did. If you look at the lining on it.
Yes, I really don't like that card. Okay, let's just pass this one. Louise, you want to go and pass this one around, because that's an example of like my
some of the early work, stuff. Yeah,
just the what's become the Munchkin style. Just that wasn't there quite yet. And I don't like that drawing. I hadn't developed a very consistent style in Munchkin. I really don't like that card at all.
I'm sorry. The only reason I was pulling it out is because I thought, in our current political, it's very funny that, and this card is, 10, 12 years old at
that one's
at
more
least.
Like 15.
Oh, really?
Well, that's
okay.
That was in the first, I believe, Munchkin game. And that's now, again,
is that
the 15th
first
anniversary.
Oh, wow. Yeah, he's been collecting these for a while. We have a big stack of them.
You can kind of see the Munchkin style evolving with that. I'm not a fan of that.
Well, and that's a question too, because with the lining, but a question also is the Munchkin Marvel. I just saw it out. I have not looked in the box. So I haven't opened a box. I haven't seen an open box. Is it Marvel drawings? Is it your drawings of Marvel?
It's original Marvel drawings.
Okay.
So Munchkin Marvel, Munchkin Nightmare, Before Christmas, Munchkin Adventure Time. I've not drawn those.
They came with. Okay.
Yes.
I was just curious because I would love to see your version of a lot of the Marvel.
Oh, I would love
figures.
To use a proper superhero licensed version.
Yeah.
And, something like that might actually happen. But again, that's one of those secret Munchkin things I can't
Dear
really
Marvel,
about.
If you hear this, we're just saying it's okay. We'd like to see the. Would everybody here like to see Marvel Munchkin? We have a room that would love.
Maybe some other comic companies.
Or other comic companies, with another initials of DC or Image or anything like that. So that would be great. So just a couple more questions on this. So you're also famous. not just for your art, but also how you proposed to your wife.
Yes. Yes.
And that is a story.
Yes.
Which is funny to me.
So my wife and I just recently celebrated our 20th anniversary. Mm-hmm. And I actually proposed, for a long time, before Dork Tower, I was doing a comic strip called Wildlife. And I'd been doing that strip since high school, and then it ran in my high school newspaper and in my college newspaper. And then for a brief period of time, it was actually syndicated in American newspapers by Chronicle Features. And I had been dating Judith for 2 years at that point, I believe. And I sort of come to the realization that, well, if she asked me to marry her, of course I was going to do that. So why don't I just take the first step? And I wanted to try and come up with some clever way of proposing to her. And I thought about having it done at on the What Do You Know show or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then the day before our dating anniversary, I came up with the idea of just putting it in the comic strip. And so I drove over to the Wisconsin State Journal. I got the office manager to agree to this. Nobody else at the newspaper knew about this.
Okay.
I came up with the idea for the comic strip. I drew it then and there at the newspaper. And it was Carson the Muskrat, who was still in the comic strip Dork Tower, just writing. Carson's sort of a failed poet, and I touch on that from time to time. And, oh, Louisa's got a drawing of Carson the Muskrat here.
Nice drawing of Carson there.
And it actually looks more like a muskrat than mine does. And Carson is just reading a poem, and he says, I'm trying to remember this. My love for you is ever true and deeper far than any sea. Second panel, you are my love, my light, my life. Judith, will you marry me? The third panel is blank. He's just staring at it. And the fourth panel is Carson saying, what's the punchline? And another character leaning in saying, him trying to buy a ring on a state journal salary. And so we put that in the newspaper with nobody else at the newspaper knowing about this. And the next day it ran in the newspaper. And Judith actually didn't read it because the radio, several disc jockeys on the radio were talking about it. And so she heard it on the radio first.
Not
read it, which actually saved me the potential embarrassment of her not reading it at all.
Just being there and being like...
And so then the National Enquirer called, and they didn't say they were from the National Enquirer, but they sent a photographer out there, and so Judith and I made the pages of the National Enquirer.
You did, with a cute little heart?
Yes, the cute little heart.
So, I'm just, yes?
Also, on the cake, they had a... one Carson the Muskrat with another Carson the Muskrat holding hands with outfits on.
Yes, I made a cake topper I made out of Sculpey, Carson and his girlfriend, wife. Muskrat Susan.
Very cool.
Getting married, yes.
I am curious why a muskrat and not a badger if you were in Wisconsin, but...
I came up with all these characters when I was in England. I was born in England, I went to school in England, and we lived in both countries back and forth, which is why I've got no accent now, but if I moved back, I would. I just started, for this comic strip, I just started drawing animals, and I called them things which they did not look like. So there is a badger in the old Wildlife comic strip called Snyder.
Okay.
All the many of the characters were named after American talk show hosts. So Snyder the Badger was Tom Snyder. Carson the Muskrat, and for a while there was a duck who didn't appear very often called Donahue. So there was a badger. But yeah, I'd never seen a muskrat. I'd never seen a badger. I just drew these animals, and they look nothing like what they're supposed to look like. Right. So that's kind of a running joke, and I still in Dork Tower go back to that one every now and then.
Yeah, and your cartoons are Shetland Productions.
They were Shetland Productions.
They were.
Yes. So now everything's under the Dork Storm Press.
Yeah. Yes. But did you own a Shetland pony? Have you ever?
No. But it was something I used to play with my sister and now play with Louisa. Yes.
Sometimes Shetland pony, he talks really weird.
Shetland ponies talk weird.
Yeah, when my sister was about Louise's age, my brother and I came up with these characters who were just play a pony and a goat, and we would just play these characters, and now do the same thing with Louisa.
Very cool.
Shetland pony.
So I actually went 1 year with somebody I was dating, drove around England, and got up into Scotland and took a ferry from Aberdeen, I think. Anyway, to the Shetland Islands,
mm-hmm.
just because we were there, and it's like, hey, let's go see Shetland ponies. And there were no Shetland ponies on the Shetland Islands. There were lots of sheep. There were a ton of sheep. And when I saw these things in the distance, I was going, look at all those Shetland ponies. They were not Shetland ponies.
No,
they were
but
not.
I know why that you thought that they were Shetland ponies.
Why?
Shetland ponies are not a normal sized pony.
Shetland ponies are very tiny.
They're very tiny.
Still, once you get closer, you can tell the difference from sheep.
Yeah, yes. I had a Shetland pony, and I will tell you that they're not nice.
Oh.
They're not nice. They bite.
Oh, my. Because all the cartoons I saw in England about
that. That's what I was wondering. I was like, dude, are you around Shetlands? But it's cool that I like the game.
Shetland ponies bite?
They just, I think part of my idea on that is that they are small, and that is the defense mechanism they have. They can nip at you. And they don't bite hard. They just nip. Because they just want you to move or do whatever.
So they're not that territorial?
Oh, it's not like territorial. No, it's more like, you know what? You're in my way, and instead of pushing you, I'm going to try to, like, nip you to get you out of the way.
Oh, but before we go, Louisa had a brief speech you wanted to say.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Oh, you don't. She also draws the Duck of Doom about as well as I do. So that's...
All right, Louisa, you're going to have to sign that one for me before you go. Okay.
My dad makes awesome books. Like, that's not how Mom does it.
Yeah, I'm now working on some kids' books, and luckily Louisa approves of this.
In this book, it actually was based on a real thing that happened. My mom was away, me and Dad were together for a week, and he was combing my hair, and that's when I yelled, that's not how Mom does it. That's how we got the idea from the book. We have daddy-daughter days. I love them. I love my dad a lot. He is awesome. I hate him.
Your dad is awesome. Thank you, Louisa. That is great. Oops, I'm sorry.
He's a awesome artist. He is cool at soccer and good at supporting me at baseball.
Awesome.
He's a cool dad. Louise.
Thank you.
Thank you. I'm sorry. I thought you were at the end, but that's awesome. Thank you. Aww. That's so cool. So we've got a couple more minutes, and I wanted to open up. Does anybody have any questions in the audience? And if you do, I'm going to bring a microphone down, so hold on.
Nope.
Come on, guys. You got to have some questions.
So I think you already answered a couple of my first ones. You were talking earlier on, but I don't know if I'm missing something. I've always wanted to ask either you or Steve, what is the deal with the Duck of Doom? Is that a reference to that game?
It was just a very silly thing. Why pick up a duck in a dungeon? And it was just a very silly little idea, which has grown to have a life beyond anything we could have possibly thought. I try to draw the duck in every Munchkin set I do now. If it's not an actual card, it'll be in the background. But there are a lot of Munchkin cards. I would actually really like doing a whole Munchkin expansion pack at some point. But it was just a very goofy non sequitur, and people loved it. It's one of people's favorite cards. You know, why pick up a duck?
There are two ducks, Duck of Gloom and Duck of Doom.
Yes. And I now cycle, like I do a charity ride with a stuffed Duck of Doom on my helmet. The first charity ride I did this for was raining. And I got to tell you, that duck is absorbent. And it just got heavier and heavier as the 75-mile ride went on.
It's also a dice bag.
Yes, it is.
Okay, guys, come on. I know I got another one here. And the reason I'm bringing this around is we are recording this. They're going to be putting them up, so I want to make sure we get the questions out hot loud.
What's your favorite card that you've drawn?
Right now, my very favorite card is from one of the Pathfinder sets. We drew a lot of goblins in those sets, and one of them is called the Hobgoblin. And I drew the goblin in Calvin and Hobbes style. And he's got so the goblin looks like Calvin, and he's got a stuffed monster under his arm. And I really had a lot of fun with that one. And it came out looking quite nice, so I was very happy with that.
I just like Maidens of the Moon.
The Moon Maidens, yes.
I do have here. You said that you often, you'll get a sentence or two and you draw a picture around it.
Yes.
Do you ever doodle and bring some pictures and they draw a card around your drawing? Or does it always go the other way?
It always goes the other way. But I had this idea, which I still would like to try, which is, especially might be something to do this year with the 15th anniversary. I will just do a drawing and then they will put it on the website. And Steve will come up with an idea, and then Andrew should come up with an idea. And then we have also readers send in their ideas and have them vote on which idea is the best. So this would be 15 cards, so it would be its own little expansion pack. But I think something like that would be really fun.
And is that one of those things you can't talk about yet?
No, it's not. That's one of the things. I've been a little too busy to. My days are tremendously busy between Munchkin and now I'm trying to make sure Dork Tower gets back up on the website on a much more regular basis, and I'm working towards a Kickstarter for a new Dork Tower collection, and then I've got games which I actually design, which Renegade Games publishes a couple of them. So there's a game called Double Feature, which I've worked on with some friends of mine. And then other game companies, I'm doing a lot of work for them. So it's kind of funny because working in the game industry, you don't actually get a lot of time to play games.
And also the children's books. When are they going to be coming out?
I'm actually looking for some agents right now. So I'm hoping the first one, with luck, fingers crossed, should be out next year. I've been working on a second book, and I'm really enjoying that a lot. By the way, fun fact. So this is Munchkin's 15th year, and I have won precisely 2 games of Munchkin ever. And this is because whenever I play games at a convention, everybody thinks because I drew the cards, I've got some great insight into how the game is played. This is not the case. And so I get ganged up on early and often, and I do very, very, very poorly at Munchkin. But the great thing was the second game I won was actually in Poland. Last year, I get invited all over the world because Munchkin is very popular and gaming is just growing all around the world. So last year alone, I went to Ireland, Poland, Brazil. I was in Berlin, lots of places. But I was playing against the Polish national Munchkin champion, and he had just won that title that morning. And so everybody was ganging up on him and not me. And I was able to sneak in a win. So that was just delightful. Winning Munchkin is fun, but as I keep telling Louisa, you know, I obviously at this point, I don't play to win. Oh, got a question over there.
Where's our, there we go. Yeah, I think that's the thing about Munchkin too. I've only ever won one, which was the very first one I played, and I think it's because I didn't know the rules were well.
So kind of a two-part question. First, since you beat the Polish national champion for Munchkin, does that make you the Polish national champion for Munchkin? And if I, a fellow poor Munchkin player, beat you, can I take your title?
So what you're saying is the Polish championship like Highlander? I believe it must now be. So...
So we need to get you the pin, Polish national champion?
Yes, I should actually talk to my Polish publishers about that.
Yes, you should.
Yes.
So you said you don't have a lot of time to play games since you're too busy making games, but when you do have time, what games do you recommend or enjoy the most?
Okay, mainly because I don't have a ton of time. I've been playing a lot of board games over the last few years, and I love board gaming. And I have different obsessions every year. A few years ago, I was really into the cooperative board games. Things like Forbidden Island is phenomenal. If you've never played Forbidden Island, I highly recommend this to everyone. It's, you're a bunch of explorers on this island, which happens to be sinking. And it's great, and it really ratchets up the tension as the island starts going out from under you. I love Castle Panic a lot. Castle Panic is a really fun, simple game. Shortly after that, I was into Camel Up. Hugely fun game, and they're demoing it actually over in the gaming area. It's a fun game with enough game to satisfy gamers, but also light enough that other people can play it.
I'm sorry, that was Camel
Up. Camel Up. Camel Up. It's a camel racing game, but you're not actually racing the camels, you're betting on the camels.
It's a fun game, and you could also get bets or get oasis or get sandstorms. It's really fun because we were playing it with some other people, and yellow, everyone who bid for yellow won. And if you like get something really wrong, like if a camel came in last place, you would probably have to give away one of your bets.
Well, if you don't bet correctly on who wins or who loses, you've got to give points. And Cold Express is another really great game. And I thought Cold Express was going to be a gimmick because you build this first, before you play the game, you build this really lovely little Old West train. And your little meeples are outlaws jumping up and down between the cars trying to collect treasure. But it's actually it's a really nice game. That's a lot of fun.
You can even collect diamonds in that.
Fuse is a great game right now. There's a demo person from Renegade Games running this over at the demo area. It's a 10-minute game. You're on a spaceship. You and your friends are trying to defuse bombs on the spaceship. And you do this by one person rolls a bunch of dice, and you try to get combinations of the dice to defuse the bombs. And again, it's just a terrific game. Lanterns is another great game at the moment.
It's really fun, but in Fuse, you have to be timed.
Yes,
I do not like that.
There's a wonderful app you can download for free for Fuse, which has got, you know, the computer is taunting you as the time runs down. So that's really great. Role-playing, I've just gotten back into role-playing with a regular group. So we've been playing the Fantasy Flight Star Wars Edge of Empire, and we've just started a 5th edition Dungeons & Dragons, Dragons 5th edition campaign, and I love 5th edition because it's so streamlined, and I've been running it actually for my nieces and nephews as well.
What's
so,
a campaign?
A campaign is the entire – it's a series of scenarios of adventures linked together. And I've been getting back into a little bit of miniatures gaming. Historical miniatures gaming was my first love, and that kind of got me into all these other forms of gaming. And that one really takes a lot of time because you need time to paint, you need time to get the rules, you need time to get the terrain and everything laid out. But I adore pushing lead around a table.
We got time for one more question? Anybody? Yep. Okay. Come right back up here where we started.
Louisa just drew Steven Universe here. It's really...
So I'm a little curious about your Dork Tower characters a little bit. I've seen that. I haven't read them as much as I could. I've read some of the comics like over the years. I've seen some of the crossover stuff with Penny Arcade, and the characters pop up in Munchkin. I was just curious, are any of those based off of real people at all, or are those all just sort of like...
The main characters are all me. The main characters are different aspects of my own fandom. Matt is the Dungeon Master, who is frequently getting frustrated. Igor is the total fanboy. And Ken is just the very logical, straightforward, details-oriented one.
What about Flower?
Oh, Julie. Her name is Julie.
No. What about Julie?
Julie. Okay. Julie is Matt's love interest in the strip, but I wrote her out of the strip for a while because I was trying to figure out why she would possibly like Matt back and have her become more than just a what's the phrase, the manic pixie dream girl. Yes. So she's been appearing in the strip kind of on her own for a little bit. And again, some of the Gamergate stuff has been like her reaction to that. And in the process, she's become a very strong character. And I really like where she is going. And I think it's getting close to the time where she can be reintroduced back into the strip with, you know, a real character based on her. There's an ex-girlfriend of Matt's who is based on a friend of mine. And I've never dated this person. But I can imagine what dating her would be like. So that was a very fun, easy character to write. But mostly, yeah, the main Dork Tower is really mostly making fun of me and my reaction to various things in fandom.
So we are ending this session right on time. I'm trying to do it. They gave me rules, so I'm trying to follow the rules.
Gamers getting rules? Oh, no.
It's a little scary when we get rules, and they're actually written out as well. So I'm going to be walking John over to where he's going to be signing. We're over near Lance Guest across from that big Ghostbusters. It's where the white and orange sign is. So that's where John's going to be signing for the next 30 minutes.
And if you don't have anything to sign, the hotel is very helpfully provided.
We have lots of little pieces of paper in the back.
These pieces of paper, so I'd be very happy to sketch something if anybody wants something.
Oh, excellent. So that'll be great. And so I'm going to walk him over there along with Ms. Louisa and the wonderful wife. And we will see you guys there in just about 2 or 3 minutes. Thank you guys very much for being here.
Thank you very much.
And thank you, John. And Louisa.
Thank you, Louisa.
Yes, I know. I was like, can I touch the munchkin cards? And I was like, I don't know. I think that went great. Thank you so much. Thank you. You think it went well?
Oh, okay? Very fun. Thank you. Yes.
We want to have fun. And I always put water out with me just in case.
Thank you.
No. I just always do it in case. And Louisa's got to sign something for me. So hold on.
Oh, yes.
I'll be over there. I'm coming right with you.
This has been a production of The Unique Geek. To leave a comment or suggestion, call us at 813-3210-TUG or email us at thegeeks@theuniquegeek.com. Follow The Geeks on Twitter at @TheUniqueGeek. Visit our listserv at listserv.theuniquegeek.com. This podcast is distributed under a Creative Commons share alike non-commercial license.